This podcast is for informational purposes only. It is not intended to provide medical advice. It exists only to entertain. Overlooking the grounds of Bedlam Hospital in 1705, a physician is interrupted by a visitor. Good afternoon. Sorry to intrude on you up here.
Oh, it is no problem. I'm just enjoying the afternoon sun, having a bit of tea.
Overlooking the grounds of the establishment, it would seem.
That too. Lovely day, isn't it?
Can't argue with you there, Doctor. A fine spring afternoon. If it wasn't for the throng of tortured humanity down below, I'd say it would be an ideal setting.
Oh, I think torture is a strong word. I'd say we charitably provide for the insane here at Bedlam.
Wasn't trying to be insulting. I just hear the wails and think, torture. Silly, I know.
Well, good sir, I'll have you know we do our very best here to make sure these insane people are cared for. Why, they'd only be wandering the streets if it weren't for this facility.
Ah, yes. Here they can safely pace within the walls.
Oh, come now, it's more than that. Here they receive treatment. Treatment that would be unavailable elsewhere.
Sure, I meant no offense. Treatment indeed. Tell me, Doctor. Are those chains being used over there to tie those people down?
Oh, yes. Medical-grade chains, however.
I see.
Oh, good sir. I'm starting to think you have an agenda here. Is this your first time to Bedlam? Why would you pay to come see the facility and grounds of this fine institution and then find the nearest doctor to jabber on about concerns you have for the care of the patients here? How are you in any sort of position to cast aspersions on our work here?
Oh, I didn't purchase a ticket here to watch insane people roam around.
Oh, well, how the devil did you get in here, then?
I'm a patient here. Have been for a few years.
Oh. I see.
It just seems to me, as a person who's been in here for the past few years, that there's room for improvement. I mean, we're human beings, after all, not animals in a zoo to be ogled at all day. It's not very humane look for a modern society, wouldn't you think?
Well, we must fund this hospital somehow. Charging admission was an option we chose. I'm sorry you feel that way.
Ah, I guess I'll get over it.
Do you mind if I ask you something?
Sure.
You seem quite, normal, if I may. What sort of condition landed you in Bedlam Hospital?
Me? Oh, I strangled a doctor.
A what?
Ah, no. Just kidding. I suggested that animals have feelings, and I didn't like seeing them in zoos.
Are you you were declared insane for that?
Yep, well, I can't remember. Maybe I did strangle a doctor. Hard to say.
I think I'll go now.
Well, sounds fair. Mind if I finish your tea?
I think I would mind. I'm not even halfway...
Really? You sure? I really like your tea.
On second thought, maybe you should have it.
Thanks. Good tea. I'm feeling less strangly now. Maybe giving them tea is the treatment for people who fancy strangling doctors. Might be better than all the chains and purging of fluids, eh?
I'll take it under advisement.
It's a good idea.
History, it's just Max and there and Mike and me. You gotta listen, you don't have to read.
Welcome, everyone. This is Poor Historians, a podcast delving into the archives of medical history. As three emergency physicians, we will explore the unusual ailments, treatments, physicians, and all related material having to do with the healing arts. I am Max, and I am joined here by my good friends and colleagues, Aaron and Mike. Gentlemen, what's your sign?
Do you know, Mike?
Wait, Aries. Yeah, I'm an Aries.
Oh, that's like the ram, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're bullheaded and...
I don't know. I don't know if that's what that means.
Yeah, I'm a Capricorn, but I'm on the cusp. So I'm technically half Sagittarius.
That's so. I've heard that said about you.
Yeah. Yep. So
Sagittarius. Is that how the song goes?
I think that's the Asian Aquarius is what you're trying to say.
I am a Gemini. That is not in any way pertinent to anything we're talking about today. I don't know. Do you guys have any shout outs that we're aware of?
I have none, but I never do.
Yeah. I mean, for the episode, I definitely have a shout out to one Dr. Jonathan Andrews, who is a professor at Newcastle University, wrote a, you know, I got to say the PDF, I think was about 600 pages of a thesis called Bedlam Revisited.
Read that all in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, pretty much. Nah, I heavily skimmed. But
is there a bunch of add-ins? Like, you know how when you wrote a paper and you had to make it 3 pages long and you're like, instead of saying, it's like, oh, it's just way more words than you need.
There were a lot of footnotes, but it is incredibly well-researched.
What are the margins like? How are the margins?
Yeah, font size. Yeah, look at them.
No, it was tiny font, man. Tiny, tiny. But yeah, I found it online and reached out to Dr. Andrews via email and LinkedIn, and he graciously allowed me to use it for a source for the episode. So huge shout out to him. Yeah, and if anyone is interested after this episode, you know, if you can find it, it is a heck of a read, So
I think we can link to it in the show notes. That's easy enough. And all right, well, hey, with that, why don't we just jump right in, man?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so yeah, I mean, I think some places grab our imagination so much they actually change the language, and such it is for Bedlam. A word we could easily use on a summer night in the emergency department, but which comes from the Bethlehem Hospital in London, known...
You said
in...
Bedlam.
Oh, did I? Bedlam? Bedlam?
You yeah. said it comes yeah. from Bethlehem?
Yeah, that's the original name. Yeah, Bethlehem is... It got changed so that the Bedlam is a nickname. It's known informally as Bedlam.
I see.
And is the oldest psychiatric hospital in the world. I checked that on Google. It said it was true. But it's got a legitimate claim, even if it isn't technically. The word Bedlam is now synonymous with mental illness. And because of that, we should start with a warning and a bit of a disclaimer. The history of Bedlam does trace a huge shift in attitudes about mental illness. And in the Victorian era and before, it included a lot of difficult views of patients with mental illness. And if I go through this, I'm going to highlight treatments and attitudes about mental illness that don't apply anymore. I think in modern medicine, we all advocate for mental health treatment on a daily basis. And if you're in crisis or would be affected by discussions of how mental health patients were treated in the past, this might not be a great episode. Also, good time to mention that there is a national suicide prevention hotline in the U.S. available 24/7, 1-800-273-TALK or 273-8255. So
that seems very reasonable.
Some quick background before we get to the famous portion of Bedlam in the 16 and 1700s. So it started as a poorhouse in the 1200s in London, attached to an order of monks, and survived the medieval period in London as a place of refuge for the poor mainly. But somewhere along the way, probably in the 1300s, it entered history as a place for the insane. And the name Bedlam came from that early, tiny, decrepit stone structure in downtown London. It really wasn't that big in the beginning. I mean, it was maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 cells. And then by the time, just before it moved and got huge, it's maybe 40 or 50 cells.
Are there many stone structures that are not decrepit from that time period?
Probably not. But I think by the standards of the day, even then, it really wasn't that impressive.
Dingy
for the medieval period.
Asshole, yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's rough. Not a good look, yeah.
Unlike today, there was little, if any, separation of the people kept at Bedlam and the regular population. So patients were often free to come and go, and visitors could come and go as well. And so there was a lot of close contact with people who were just floridly insane or, manic. And there are accounts of quote, endless screechings and howlings from Bedlam. It was happened to be built over an old sewer that also regularly overflowed. So it's all just a bad look. Many of the patients
Does it go up or down from here?
It goes up
story-wise.
Architecturally, I don't think it necessarily goes up other ways. So
okay, checking. Well, I said I just wanted to see what we're in for.
Oh yeah, it's an interesting story. A lot of patients were given just straw in their cells. A fair number of them were chained at times, sometimes elaborately, so they couldn't necessarily leave. There was apparently one wooden cistern for water. So yeah, granted, I mean, this is medieval London, so even the best of times was not necessarily that sanitary, as we've seen in other episodes. But still, when visited by charitable governors, it was deemed completely unfit for any habitation whatsoever.
Oof, that's really bad given the year. Like, you know what? This is too far.
Yeah.
This is medieval England.
It's rough. Dr. Andrews was able to find perhaps two or three references to the building being cleaned over about three centuries. They actually mentioned, oh, we cleaned it out. It's better now. it's not enough.
Not enough. The same as my house, to be fair.
I was just going to say I clean the same way.
Yeah, true. Me too. Definitely. And then playwrights in the 1600s used it as a setting and a dramatic device for madness in many, many popular plays, leading to sort of further fame and the name. Because, of course, those were like the blockbusters of the day, right? So they didn't have Marvel. They had Jacobean dramas on stage. So,
and then they went out of business when streaming networks came up.
Yeah, they really just couldn't, you know, they couldn't compete on a format basis. It's the plays don't have the same majesty on YouTube. So
that's true.
But the true heyday of Bedlam, really, the more I read about it, was when the hospital was moved to a place just outside the city center, a place called Moorlands in 1676. The building was redesigned by Robert Hooke, who doesn't really matter who it was, but as a famous architect. And, you know, this is historically when they start to really keep track, and they really, really went for it. They made this grand palatial facade of this new Bedlam hospital that was over 500 feet across, with giant turrets in the middle and lots of brick, surrounded by extensive gardens and grounds and a giant gate. They commissioned two stone statues called Melancholy and Raving Madness. So these huge sort of reclining stone men, like the size of David, but sitting on the side with scary faces that they use to interpret mental illness.
So did this one have a working sewer?
Yeah, it did. It did. Okay. Yeah, it's better, you know, significant improvement. Yeah. Yeah. No, the grounds are apparently they were much more attractive, especially the facade. The statue of Mania was in chains. Even the statue. So just really kind of over the top. For a little bit of perspective, the size of the front facade rivals some of the largest parts of the Versailles in France. So obviously, once you go inside, there's differences because Versailles is a palace and this was not a palace. But just for the sense of scale, I mean, this was a giant, giant place.
Did they build it this way because of the profound respect they had for the mentally ill patient as a culture?
Probably because there were so many of them. Like, oh, man, we just need a big building. We're going to just pile them all in there.
Yeah, so we're still talking probably hundreds of patients, that's a big hospital. No, I don't think that's quite fair to say. I think the reason they built it that way was really to gather donors and also just kind of show off in some ways. Because Bedlam lived on contributions from visitors and donors. So it's a charitable institution, and there's no funding if they don't get people to give that money.
Make it look pretty. I get it.
Yeah. A huge part of the way they survived then, starting way back in the early medieval period, but really increasing to a striking amount during this time after the rebuild, was due to donations for visitation of the hospital. So the public came to see the patients.
It's a zoo.
Yeah.
How is it not a zoo?
Well, I don't know. Let's see. Maybe we can examine.
You mentioned there are straw in cells. People are paying money to go see these poor patients
that are chained.
Is this the lowest point of humanity?
No, come on. This is actually not bad when you look at history.
Okay. It's not good, though.
Really, no, it's not good. It's not good. It did start as a matter of custom. Nobody was like, oh, let's... It wasn't like an idea to have a zoo for mentally ill patients. But it was definitely a way of soliciting donations. It reached a peak in this era. Fascinating visit for people in the age, they said, completely open. It was a huge tourist attraction in London. There was a large central entrance for visitors who could pretty much come and go as they pleased.
There are quoted numbers all over the internet of 50 to 90,000 visitors a year, but there's not great data for those numbers. Even so, there are numerous accounts of huge, huge crowds going to visit. And many accounts of socialites, well-to-do socialites, listing Bedlam on the itinerary of a day in London, you know, kind of tour along with, you know, Westminster Abbey and Big Ben and other landmarks.
It would make so much more sense. I mean, it would just be a better sign of humanity if you went to London and you managed to avoid this garish display and instead went to like the Tower of London to see the cool torture devices.
Yeah, right. Or yeah, I mean, they should have maybe opened the prison. That would have been the same thing. I don't know.
Oh, that would. You're right.
Yeah, like, but this. Anyway, there were a lot of bad things going on at that. Not that I'm aware of.
A new business idea for the podcast?
Yeah, we could. We could.
Oh, we're going to open a prison and let people come and tour it.
I mean, if anybody on the show would know about detaining people against their will, it's probably Aaron.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just, you know, open the basement, you know.
Are we going to build it or are we going to buy an existing prison?
We let's, I don't know. We'll have
you
to
know
workshop
a lot about
that
torture,
a little bit.
Aaron.
What? This is...
Okay. What kind of chains do you buy?
Okay. Okay. Yeah. No, and I picked an episode full of chains too, didn't I? Mm-hmm. Anyway, the reason for the visitation, again, primary financial. Visitors were asked to contribute at least a tuppence, but more wealthy visitors often gave up to a guinea. And I'm sorry.
What the hell do those mean?
I have no idea what that means in today's dollars. I would say tuppence was the cost of a bag to feed the birds in Mary Poppins. And a guinea seems like a lot more. I mean, there's like countries named after it, right? There's New Guinea.
How many tuppences to a dollar?
A lot. It's got to be a lot, I would think, right?
But even today, you know, they're like, oh, it's a quid. You know, like, what's a quid? Like, I don't, does that mean four of something? Is it? Can he?
A quad.
Yeah.
If one of our English listeners could please help us out. We look up a lot of stuff. We can't look up anything further.
Yeah. And what's the conversion to a halfpenny? That's what I want to know.
A tuppence.
There were huge crowds on holidays, especially just a good Easter outing, you know, not as much in the winter, but on big summer holidays, it was described as a fair-like atmosphere with vendors and long lines to get in. People were able to just kind of roam
funnel
all over.
Cakes. They have funnel cakes?
Probably, right? With the little, they had, you know, they probably had in the shape of melancholy or madness. There were what were called basket men. I don't know why they're called that. I didn't get there. It's 600 pages. There's a lot. The attendants and staff, but they were pretty open to bribery and so on for access to special tours to certain parts of the asylum that were, you know, more titillating. Dr. Adams, I must say, does a lot of good work to defend Bedlam as appropriate for the time. And he does absolutely have a point. There was a lot of crazy stuff going on in that era. But still, the stories that come out of these sort of visitations are bonkers. And although I totally buy that Bedlam was a product of its era rather than some sort of anomaly, it was just a lot. So yeah, let's get into some of the details. So the people that publicized the hospital were intent on encouraging and pointing to, quote unquote, a desirable class of visitor. So that's one whole set of people that would go. High-class socialites went to visit the, quote, lunatics at Bedlam. As a means of charity, but also crucially, based on philosophies of the time, it's like an object lesson to make themselves better people. So insane.
I was thinking that when you first said the visitation, I was thinking it felt like a scared straight thing. Like you bring your kid, like if you don't eat your porridge, you're going to end up like this guy.
Yeah, no, they did. There are accounts of people bringing kids to Bedlam to be like, look, if you don't, watch out, you're going to end up like this, because the insane were thought to represent the basest animal instincts of humanity. So people would go to remind themselves not to give themselves over to, I don't know, lust or greed or whatnot. So they wouldn't end up in Bedlam or be like people that were insane.
This is not one of the lowest moments of human society.
Still going.
Still going. Let's see. We can pass judgment at the end. Preachers of the day, in addition to the philosophers, used Bedlam as an example of what happened when people gave in to their animal instincts, to the point that there were regulations that banned any evangelical visitors because they would come, you know, early on, they would come and preach to their parishioners outside of Bedlam or on the grounds. And they just got very distracting.
That was the problem. Like, just nobody can pay attention to the therapy sessions. That was totally the
problem. Yeah. So the well-to-do visitors often contributed quite a bit of money. I know a guinea goes a long way, especially when compared to tuppence. But I'm not entirely sold on the virtue of the visit. There was one very curious lawsuit in 1735 where a gentleman named Samuel Collins sued to get damages from a basket man, which is one of the attendants, and a patient. He actually sued the patient for a leg injury that gentleman Collins sustained as he tried to gain entry to a patient's cell where the actual Prince of Wales was shut in with a female patient. Now, I'm sure the Prince of Wales really just wanted more time to delve into the true pathos of mental illness and really understand melancholia. Of course, the suit was kept out of the press, so there are no further details, and we're left to just kind of infer what was happening. But
what do you think was happening, Mike?
He probably was, you know, there was a, you know,
exactly.
He was trying to express his humors, his own humors, and maybe her or his humors. We don't know what the gender of the other inmate is.
What's that female patient?
Oh, no, it's female patient. Ah. Yeah. I mean, not that.
Because I wasn't listening.
Not that. Well, you know, I do kind of drone on. I drone on sometimes. It's okay. It's
such a calming, soothing voice. I was just picturing myself trying to gain entry into a cell in Bedlam.
So I should start an ASMR podcast, is what you're saying?
Oh my God, yeah.
That's what we've been doing, Aaron.
Pretty much.
Have you actually listened to one of the episodes I released? It's only your voice.
Mm-hmm. And clanking chains in the background.
Oh,
and moans and wails.
This is great. Well, yeah, you just got to put a... Anyway, I'm not playing into this joke. I dislike it. Anyway.
I don't do it. It's only Max. Max is an aggressor. He's a bully.
This incident with the lawsuit was by no means the only way that sex is implied as part of the story of Bedlam from the historical record. Because of the morals and discretion of the time, a lot of what we know is inference from regulations that were passed prohibiting certain things. So, yeah, there weren't any regulations at all. And they were sort of passed piecemeal over the years to prohibit various activities. And of course, you don't need a rule to prohibit something that isn't happening, since the initial regulations were non-existent. There are numerous regulations and discussions in the late 1600s to regulate, quote, young maids and girls and other loose people. Also described as, quote, vain boys and petulant wenches, end quote.
So they're just describing Instagram.
That's right. So those people from coming into Bedlam, they're trying to keep them out, which raises quite a bit of suspicion that the hospital was used at least as a hookup spot. Or as an area to solicit prostitution.
Are we still reserving judgment? We're still reserving judgment.
Which way doth thou like to swipe?
If swipeth right, go this way. I don't know which way swiping is good. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
No, anyway.
Front to back. Yeah, back to front. Swipe back to front. You'll be fine.
No. Where was I?
Man, brought Aaron to a full stop.
Even if it wasn't clearly an area for hookups, it was listed as a prime date spot in media of the day.
It was beautiful by all and everything. Totally.
The grounds, yeah.
And since this is a Poor Historians podcast trademark, I'm obligated to make things suddenly even more dark by mentioning how often it was discussed that unexpected pregnancies were found among female patients of sometimes unknown origin.
No.
But also confirmed as related to employees that had unrestricted access to female patients in the 1600s as well. We can name Edward Langdale and William Jones, who were two basket men who had, quote, unrestricted access, who were dismissed in 1681 for impregnating patients.
Is that what that Counting Crows song is about? It's William Jones and me walking around in Bedlam.
Yes.
Oh, improv.
Yeah. Oh, that's, even after a system where a matron was supposed to have keys to certain areas of the hospital for female patients, many subsequent pregnancies were recorded in regular long-term residence. People had been there for years, so obviously couldn't have been pre-existing conditions. So
You think it's from them sitting in the toilet seats, or
probably, yeah, what that's what it was. Yeah. But they have toilet seats.
The toilet stone.
I think they were making their best to hover back then.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Could you imagine? Or they didn't care.
Oh, they didn't even know what germs were.
Could you imagine if you send one of these people into a porta potty, they would sit right down, cheeks on the plastic, without knowing how disgusting it is.
Look at this outstanding privy. Oh,
it's the cleanest toilet I've ever taken a dump in.
New regulations also reveal another pastime. In 1650, it was forbidden to bring alcohol onto the grounds, which is a great segue to another constituent that visited Bedlam. So in addition to the highfalutin socialites, there are tons of accounts of, I want to say, commoners visiting Bedlam just completely for the spectacle in front of it. So newspaper accounts from the 1700s talk about loud, obnoxious, drunk people just sort of running through the hospital, giving alcohol to the patients to try and provoke a reaction. And that was probably the best option. Otherwise, they would just sort of yell at them or poke them or prod them until they had an outburst. Remember, any time of day. So they, you know, at the end of the 1700s, they started to restrict it down and eventually got rid of it. But for hundreds of years, there were any hour of the day, if you were a patient, people would just like show up at your window. And
that's nuts. Think about like a day at the bar, you're out, you want to go to Oakland Euros, they're closed. You're like, let's just go to Bedlam and poke some people. I'm not ready for bed yet.
I mean, patients often were, if they were given alcohol, they probably, a lot of the patients would take it happily because a lot of the treatments of the day forbade even rich or sugary foods, let alone alcohol. So, which is probably good. But like a lot of the restrictions were quite harsh for the patients as far as what they were fed. Yeah, but yeah, okay. So we'll just keep going though. It's not stopping yet. Well-behaved or socially astute patients were often given free rein. So there are multiple accounts from visitors of a very pleasant tour guide for the hospital that they found, only to find out at the end that their guide was a patient. Yeah, there weren't any real lockdown procedures.
It's like going to the zoo and then your tour guide turns out to be Harambe. Is that still a thing?
Harambe will always be a thing.
Rip.
Yeah. And, you know, one other short-lived regulation in 1708 points to another way things got crazy. It asked that visitors left their swords at the gate. But that lasted only 3 years due to vociferous protests from visitors. I mean, how are they supposed to defend themselves or poke the patients if they don't have their swords? So
it's like the time I got yelled at the Renaissance Festival for having a battle axe.
Did that really happen?
I made a scene.
Yes. Was it metal?
You were that guy?
Metal. I bought it there. Okay. All right, here.
I mean, it's a Renaissance
fair. I bought the battle axe there. Like, literally went, purchased it. And like, here, cool. Here's a sheath, or here's a thing put on your belt, and you can hang it from your belt. Cool. So then I walk 10 paces outside of the booth where I just purchased a battle axe, and I get stopped by security. And they're like, you have to have a cover on that. And I was like, yeah, but I literally just bought it 2 seconds ago from that guy over there who is selling them at your establishment.
Yeah, like, that sounds like a racket.
I was like,
that's a shakedown right there.
The security guy was selling covers.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I would make a scene too. I get that. That's for sure. Yeah, so bring in a bunch of alcohol, run up and down through the halls, poke the patients, get in a duel of swords if you're up for it. Definitely a very healing environment. Yeah.
A nice milieu.
Yeah. You know, and it, so we can move on to, it's harsh to judge treatments at Bedlam, which we can talk about for a minute now from a modern lens.
Is it really?
You know, and if we're fair, we should probably note that Bedlam was more a product of their time than some sort of conspiracy against the mentally ill. So through that same area with the visitations, there were attempts to start more scientific treatment of ailments. And scientific, it's doing a lot of work in that sense. Mm. There were restrictive diets since rich foods might excite the senses. And exercise for those that were able. They had a category of patients that were referred to as wet patients.
Wait, I thought they were moist. Moist.
Well, it probably, I hate that word. I can't even use it.
Why does everybody hate that word? I don't.
Moist.
Stop.
Just, it's.
Those were people that tended to be incontinent or would make a mess of themselves. Mm. They were left alone and not made to exercise or left restrained because it was too hard to get them ready to exercise. And there literally weren't enough staff to try to, So these people just were stuck. One can imagine, based on what we said so far, that there was just a huge use of restraints. For anyone who isn't medical listening in the modern day, we do need to meet a very high bar to restrain a patient physically. They have to be sort of actively hurting themselves or others or pulling medical equipment out that they need. And even then, we have to provide a face-to-face assessment to continue restraints on a regular basis, which is absolutely a good thing. And sometimes I think, if you don't think about history, you wonder, why do we have to do all that? And that is because of the people that ruined it before. This is a reaction, you know, they just use restraints all over the place.
So many things are because of people before you who ruined it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there wasn't even really any sort of conception that this was a problem until the early 1800s. So kind of at the end of this era, when King George had obvious mental illness, which caused a reconsidering of restraint. Because, you know, a famous person got sick, so now maybe we shouldn't treat them badly.
Just got real.
Yep. Before that, chains, straitjackets, and manacles were not only common, but they were thought to be helpful. So that those. Sorry,
this is kind of upsetting to me because do they have womanicles too? Femalicles? Chesticles?
They're ladyicles. They're ladyicles. But they said that those with mental illness, the restraints were so that they could be held, quote, harmless without having to suffer, end quote, which is, I think, a very blissfully optimistic interpretation of what restraints meant for people. They thought straitjackets might be an improvement in the 1700s because they were less likely to create visible injury. But yeah, they were commonplace for anyone described as mischievous, which, again, it's just doing a lot of work.
Mischievous is the understatement there.
Yeah, yeah. This also became more complicated when courts started putting patients in bedlam as criminally insane or even sounds like political prisoners, which is maybe a whole other topic. William Ellis was an example of someone tried by the Privy Council for just having, quote, spoken desperate speeches touching His Majesty's person, end quote. I don't.
I don't touch the Majesty's person unless he wants you to.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't sound very harmful, though. So that he was put in bedlam in 1617 and was to be, quote, kept safe in chains until further order. So, yeah, they just threw a bunch of people in there to be chained to the wall. To be fair, it was probably even worse in private asylums because, you know, a restrained patient is a paying patient and they can't leave if they're chained to the bed. So
interesting.
Nope, we don't have time for this right now.
Wait, what'd you just do?
I saw this BIOS boot up sequence by jarring the motherboard. I didn't want you to be rudely interrupted by some old time advertisement. You were saying?
It seems convenient that you can do that.
How about we focus on the topic at hand, Aaron?
All right. Perhaps we can finish up with therapeutic treatments, since this is, after all, a medical history podcast. Mm. Helkiah Crook was the very first physician appointed to Bedlam in 1619.
Helkiah?
Yeah, and Crook.
I have an awesome name.
With an E, though. You got to have the E at the end. That means it's not actually a crook. He's like just a crooky.
I'm stuck on Helkiah.
Yeah, Helkiah's great, man.
Is it where a lot of Helkiah's anymore?
Bring that back.
Maybe it's where Crooky Monster came from.
Nice.
The joke is way too G-rated. I'm striking it.
I'm just saying, you know, maybe he was cooking. No, he was blue. Yeah. Who knows? He walked around Bedlam eating cookies, talked in a grumbling voice, was terrifying to the people that were there.
Oh, man. Yeah. Could you imagine? That'd be rude.
Crooky Monster.
As befits the age, the first physician keeper of Bedlam was pretty much in it for the title and the money, as most of the medical care of the time was basically a giant grift, let's be honest. When Crook was dismissed, they actually came up with an apothecary surgeon and physician as sort of a board of treatment people. But this was often sort of a side gig to being a royal physician. You know, it's probably not harmful to the patients that they didn't pay them much attention given the state of medical care at the time.
Forgetting to bleed all the patients.
I know, darn it. So bad for them.
Probably a good thing.
Newgate Prison, the Palace, and Bedlam all competed for time with the providers of the era, and they took away from private practice, so care was intermittent at very best. And certainly psychiatry as a specialty was, they hadn't gotten there yet. So,
no. 300 years, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. That's we got to get to that at some point. They did at times exhibit exemplary caution and stood up for their patients. They strongly resisted advised treatments for insanity in the 1660s, for example, when it was postulated that animal to human blood transfusions might cure insanity. After
it would, by causing death.
Exactly. After Dr. Hook, not Crook, advocated this experiment with the backing of the Royal Society of Physicians at the time. So they said, no, we're not going to do that experiment. By hook or by crook, they'll get you. There was a great deal of enthusiasm for bathing as a treatment in the late 1600s and early 1700s. And there was a case report in 1702 of a cold bath curing suicidality, which is, that's great. I don't know.
I wasn't sure what to expect when you were going to talk about bathing. As how could that be bad? They somehow made it a little bit bad.
A little bit. It's, otherwise, it's probably pretty good. Ugh. Yeah. Cold. Very. Earth. Yeah. Just cold. No. Cold bathing. Yeah. But then they unfortunately abandoned that for another couple hundred years because it was inconvenient.
That was the problem.
Yeah. Through the 1700s, that was probably the best outcome a patient could hope for because the insane were considered sick regardless of the physical exam. The typical purgatives and bleedings of the era were prescribed often for days or even up to a week without even an exam or a visit. So the doctor would just say, why don't you bleed and make this person vomit for a while and I'll come see you in a week. They were absolutely bled or administered purgatives by staff. They often protested, as one would when being bled or caused to vomit, and then they were restrained and given the treatment anyway. But again, good old Dr. Adams, I got to agree, this is probably not far behind the times overall at that time. They sometimes weren't admitted if they were not deemed strong enough to undergo treatment. So they showed admirable restraint. Yeah, that patient looks too weak for me to bleed them and make them vomit endlessly. There were alternative treatments of stale beer and wine, which seems to me like a really good alternative to intensive treatment. I would pick the cold bath and stale beer any day in the week. Even if it's flat, it's going to be better than Ipecac.
So here it says stale beer and wine. Was the wine stale or it was just like the best wine they had at the time is
it's England, so it's probably just the best wine of the time.
Oh,
yeah, shots fired. One good Dr. Cheney proclaimed that there was, quote, no more universal and effectual remedy than gentle vomits suited to the strength and constitution.
Just a little
pukes. The patient.
No big pukes, just an erp. That'll do it.
That's how everyone else in my family vomits, by the way. I don't know how they do it. They're just super quiet. They go in and they bleh, and they don't even hear it. And then,
really?
I'm starting to get eggy.
I'm not a gentle vomiter, so. No. Yeah, if y'all admit me to an asylum soon or just chain me up in my basement, I opt for the cold baths and the wine. Thanks.
And gigantic barfs.
No dainty barfs for Aaron.
No. Overall, Bedlam is a striking example to me of what passed for a hospital. Some fairground morality play of a freak show with access to patients to torment based on how much you contributed. That says as much, if not more, about the times than Bedlam itself, for sure. And I say freak show in the sense of the long-established tradition of the word, not to try to be pejorative, because those were a thing for many, many years. I think in the present day, we've come a long way, but mental health resources are still horrifically underfunded. So according to Mental Health America, almost 20% of Americans, equivalent to 50 million of us, experience mental illness in 2019, and it troubles me that those statistics come before 2020 and 2021. So
yeesh.
In that same year, pre-pandemic, 25% of patients felt they had no access to treatment. So we've come a long way from cold baths and wine, but we also sort of haven't. So Bedlam indeed.
So this is like, we have one episode where creating a sideshow was a good thing, referring to Cooney's Infantorium.
Yeah. That was a cool one. Yeah, that was a great one.
There's another one where that sword can cut both ways.
Oh, man.
But it did fund a hospital. But whether or not the services were good is the question, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I, you know, I had to sort of truncate this history to some extent, but there, you know, when they started cutting off the visitations, there's not universal agreement that was better, because then everything was closed off, so you couldn't see what was happening to the patients. And there are some accounts of people being like, wow, this person's really not being treated well, and sort of, you know, being sort of an observer. If the public's there, then you can only get away with so much. But I still don't think that's a good argument. I think it's a coincidence, you know? So yeah, I'm sorry. I'm struggling for words to describe this.
Understandable. But you know what the good news is, Aaron?
Hit me.
That's all we have time for today. We appreciate everyone listening, and we'd love to hear from all of you out there. So if you'd like to send us a message or provide feedback, we can be reached through our website, which has been newly revamped. Go check it out, www.poorhistorianspod.com. There you can find links to our social media sites. We do take emails at poorhistorianspod@gmail.com, and we work to respond to all posts on our various social media accounts. If you have time, please go and leave us a nice 5-star review on whichever platform, but probably should do it on iTunes because that's the most popular. That does help our show grow, and it doesn't take too much effort on your part. A lot of clicks, pick all the stars. If you are old-fashioned, hit us up on ICQ. That's everyone's favorite instant messaging system. Have you guys ever used it?
I don't know that one. No.
I don't know what that one is. That's MySpace.
It's pre-MySpace. That's a deep cut for the audience. I'll take a look. You know what? I'll look up my number and get back to you.
Send
on that
me
one.
A message on Gopher. That's what I want.
Oh, boy.
I don't know that one either.
Till next time, the poor historians are signing out. AMA.
It's he, isn't it? Governor?
How does that go again?
Right, it's a Cockney doctor. It's no problem.
Yeah, head out on the pitch. It's nil-nil.
Well, you kick him in the knees. Kick him in the knees till they fall over. Maybe he's a bit Australian. Who knows?
In it? Yeah, good. In it?
One of the two. Don't matter. All right. Max is not impressed. He's not impressed.
Taking it all in. Throw something in the outtake section.
I stalled his BIOS boot up. All right. I stalled his... All right. Okay. I stalled its... All right. Okay.